You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Are you confounded by your canine? Do you sometimes wish you could just wave a magic wand and presto, turn your devilish dog into a perfect pooch? Well, guess what? Help is here. Our special guest today knows dogs and, more importantly, knows how to help us two-leggers form a better connection with our canine pals. So I want you to give pause and applause to Dr. Sophia Yen. She's a top dog in the fields of veterinary medicine and animal behavior. Hey, welcome, Dr. Yen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad you're here as a guest. You know, we're going to learn some specific do's and don'ts when it comes to bringing out the best in our dogs right after this commercial break. So sit and stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. O-Behave will be right back.
Hey, ready to take a walk? Not just you, but the whole family. It's the 2009 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 7th from 11 to 3 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2009, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
School's in session on Pet Life Radio with Teacher's Pet. Learn how to communicate with your pet, train your pet, and see the world from your pet's point of view. You may even learn a few tricks yourself. Teacher's Pet, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. O-Behave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now, back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the O-Behave show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Our special guest is Dr. Sophia Yen. She is a veterinarian and applied animal behaviorist. And guess what? There's more. She is also a noted author. Home for her is in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the reason for this call is she has unleashed her savvy pet advice in another new book. I don't know if it's a book or as much as it makes War and Peace look like a little quick read. It's called Low Stress, Handling, Restraint, and Behavior Modifications of Dogs and Cats. Okay, don't let the title get you down. This is a great book. Dr. Yen, thanks for being on the show. I can't believe you finished this book and all the other things you do, but wow, I'm getting a workout just lifting it up with my hand.
Oh, yeah. It's the little three-pound thing is heavy because of all those photographs. There's 1,600 photos and a DVD, and it's heavy, but it's all photos, so you just have to read from photo to photo, which makes it basically a bathroom read.
There you go. Well, that's, you know, what I like is that your book actually, if you're doing the math, it features about 1,500 photos of cats and dogs, and what I like you say, is you have a DVD with it, too, that also showcases the right and wrong way to train, handle, and give medications to our dogs and cats. You know, because this is such an impressive piece of work, We have invited Dr. Yen to appear not only once, but twice on Obehave. So today's show, she's going to go to the dogs. She's focusing all about the dogs. And the next show, next week, she's coming back to address those catty attitudes about those fascinating and, yeah, sometimes frustrating felines. So, Dr. Yen, let's get started. I mean, what motivated you to write this 450-page/3-pound book? Wow.
I know. When you have to carry 10 of them, you realize how heavy they are.
Well, I bet you have Popeye forearms now.
Oh, yeah. I try to make other people carry them.
There you go.
So the reason I was interested is because in the last maybe 5 or more years, some of my colleagues have been giving talks about handling, or they've been saying certain things about handling in the veterinary situation or the grooming situation. And some of the things they've said have made me wonder. So they may have said, oh, you should never scruff a cat, or you should never do this to a dog. But then sometimes they didn't necessarily give a better alternative. Mm-hmm. And some people did, and others may not have. But there was nothing written that was really good. So it made me wonder, well, everybody doesn't agree with each other, so which ways are good and which ways are new and improved, and mm-hmm. what should we actually be doing? And, you know, to this point, I had been seeing behavior consults, but I had not been thinking, well, how do we apply all this great knowledge to specifically the vet and the groomer and the pet owner who takes their animal to the vet or the groomer? And so I decided that I should research this, figure out what people are doing, figure out what really, really works, and make it available to the public.
Wow. You know, it's a very ambitious project, but I think you've touched something on right what we all need to know, and that's this. Sometimes we're more concerned about telling people what not to do, but don't you think we're a pretty visual group of people on this planet? We really got to see what is the right and the wrong way, right?
Exactly. And so what I found out when I was doing this is not only do we need to show, you can't just tell somebody because they won't get it. They have to see it first. So when I was doing this book, first thing I did was I visited a friend who had given a lecture. I stayed with her for a week, saw what they did at their hospital, mm-hmm. saw what they were doing at the hospital I work at, San Francisco Vet Specialist, where the technicians are fantastic.
Oh, there's a plug right there. Kaboom!
Yes. Technicians are fantastic there. Videotaped what they were doing and what worked for some people and what worked for others, and started figuring out what are some people doing that's effective and other people doing that's not as effective. And then I started writing the book and taking photos of all these different techniques, and then I tested them out. So I would write a technique down. I'd have like 5 to 10 photos on them maybe, and then have people, technicians or people who weren't technicians, work through them and see what were they doing wrong. And it was interesting because they couldn't just read the information. They needed to have the photos, and they needed to have the photos of it being done correctly, and then they needed to have photos of it being done incorrectly so that they wouldn't make the same mistakes. Because often you see somebody doing it right, and you think you're doing it exactly that same way until you see what it looks like when it's wrong and you realize that's what you did.
Well, you know, those photos, the oopsie, wrong photos, do you still have all your appendages with some of the photos that you were doing with some of the dogs?
Oh, yeah. We were always safe, even though some of the dogs were aggressive, and if we thought that they were going to kill somebody, then they had a muzzle on.
Or but you picked something you didn't like to be in the photo.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Well, let's be specific, because in your book, I'm looking at page 38, and you did a very good job where you have a dog at a veterinary clinic, and you're showing how to recognize fear versus submissive postures. And sometimes we get it wrong. So what are some tips that maybe you can enlighten us? Because I want every listener to go out and get this book when we're all done talking, because I think, to me, it is a must-read book that all pet owners should have.
Well, for one thing, I think people tend to assume that a dog is being submissive to them when it's actually fearful. So the definition of a submissive posture is one that will turn off aggression. And animals may show submissive or appeasing postures like ahead of time just to make sure that the person or another animal knows that they're friendly. So, for instance, mm-hmm. it would be like you going up to somebody and, like, shaking their hand in a very friendly manner and speaking very friendly. in a way, it could be considered an appeasing type of posture.
Right.
A lot of times what we do to our dogs is we do something and they show postures that could be appeasing postures, but they're often fear postures, meaning the animal's actually afraid that it's going to get hurt. Because sometimes the postures are similar. And really, when we see a posture, really what we need to look for is we should be looking for fear postures. When is an animal fearful? So we all know that when an animal cringes and gets low, it's fearful. With its tail below, it's underneath its tail. And it basically, that's the same posture that you would use if you're walking and somebody yelled heads up and you knew that a soccer ball was flying towards your head. You would get small, cover your head, turn your head away, but kind of try to see the ball with your eyes. You'd make yourself as small as possible and try to get
away. I do that on the golf course. You know?
Oh, yeah. Four. Like, yeah.
Yeah. When I see here four, I find it really amusing that some people will, I don't know why they do that. They lift their head up to look for the ball. I'm like, I cover my head, I lower it, and I listen.
Although, looking up for the ball is good if you can move out of the way fast enough.
Yeah, but sometimes they don't yell four until after it's like a
about
nanosecond
you.
Before you.
Right.
Trust
right.
Me.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So the fearful posture, though, versus submissive, there is a little concern if you misread it and don't realize it's fear, right?
Right. And I think most people should first assume that their dog is fearful.
Okay.
Because, so the posture when the dog gets low is your first assumption should be fear, and then because that's more common than them just being appeasing, especially in a vet hospital situation. But the other thing is that there's a lot of little behaviors that people don't recognize as fear. So the dog may not cringe completely, but it may just step away, or it may just look away, or it may start panting when it's not thirsty. It may yawn when it shouldn't be tired. It'll have its ears out to the side. Its brows may be furrowed. And one big thing that people don't recognize is that a lot of times when dogs are scared, they just look tired, and they don't really want to move that much. So it's similar to when you get in a nervous situation. Let's say you're shy of being in public. Well, if you're nervous in that situation, you're kind of going to stand in a corner and just be quiet. You're not going to be your usual self, where if you were with friends, you'd be outgoing and walk around and talk to them all. So probably the most missed sign of fear is just that the dog or cat isn't moving as much. Because if they're in a new environment, they should be exploring. Or if they see a new person, they should look like they want to greet the person. They shouldn't look like they don't care that somebody's there, or that they're wishing, they're pretending they're not really there.
There's another term you use in the book, which I think is an interesting term to describe a dog, but it's called the whale eye. Can you explain that as well?
Yeah, whale eye is when you see the whites of the dog's eye. And you can see that for many reasons. But the main thing is that if a dog has his head pointing forward and his eyes pointing in a different direction, then you'll see the whites of his eyes. And they can do that for several reasons. So one is that if they're afraid, they're going to turn their head away, but they're still going to try to look at you sideways out of the corner of their eye, and that's where you see the whites of their eyes. So that's called whale eye. It doesn't always mean that they're fearful, because they could also be running, playing with another dog and in the lead, and they want to see where the other dog is, but they kind of still want to look forward. And you'll see the whites of their eyes there, too. So it has to do with context. When a dog is scared in general, it's going to look tense. So besides looking sleepy, it could also look tense.
And just to have a little fun and controversy in all this, I love the fact in your foreword, you talked about your caveman days. You know, there is, we're going to say it, the dog whisperer out there, who there's a lot of people who follow his philosophy. And I guess I got to just fess up and say I really follow your philosophy much better. I always cringe, but I watch the show just because I feel like I need to be educated on what is going that's the right and wrong way. So from your standpoint, talk to us about what your style was like as a veterinarian and on your way to being an applied animal behaviorist, which means you got a lot of Vanna White initials after your name, and the role that his teaching has done to shape up what you've become.
Well, when I first started, I used the traditional methods, which are basically the same as the dog whisperer. So Cesar Millan is using techniques that have been used for a long time, and those were based on catching the dog doing it wrong so that you can punish him, and also assuming that the dog, everything the dog does that's wrong is because he's trying to gain higher rank or he's trying to be dominant. And the problem with that is dominance is really a relationship between individuals. It's not a dog's personality trait. A dog could be aggressive or pushy, but a dominance is not, that is not what dominance is. Dominance is a relationship between individuals that is developed through force and aggression on one, aggression and submission on one animal's part in order to gain priority access to resources. So it would be like, in order to gain ability to mate with all the females you want to mate with, or get a priority access to food, or have priority to resting spots. And most of what we see in our pets is, no, they're not being aggressive because they want to rule all of the resources. They are being aggressive because they're fearful, or they got into a situation where they had no alternative, like they got yelled at and they felt like they were cornered and they couldn't get it. Nobody said, well, come over here and do this instead. They just yelled at them. So the dog reacted, and they just learned to react that way. Just like if somebody always came and yelled at you, every time you saw them in that situation, you would expect them to yell at you and you might be defensive ahead of time. The other thing is that when dogs are misbehaving, usually they're not misbehaving because they want higher rank or priority access to resources. They're misbehaving because they somehow got rewarded for all those misbehaviors. For instance, if the dog is stealing food off of a table, well, obviously Getting the food is very rewarding. And,
well, unless you're at my house and you're eating my food, you know, they're like, no thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Right. And realistically, even in the wild, if a higher ranked animal is not available to guard that resource, then the other animal will still steal it. And that's called an alternative strategy for getting what you want. So the lower ranked one can take anything he wants behind the back of the higher ranked one. And that's not challenging rank. That's being smart and getting it whichever way works. So most of what we do, most behavior problems aren't even related to rank or dominance. They're behaviors that have been rewarded, and we have to figure out how to stop rewarding them and instead reward alternate behaviors that we do want. Now, the problem...
So that's why your difference is you're more of the positive reinforcement versus Caesar Milan's sort of dominance.
He's using a lot of force. He's, you know, most of it is, a lot of it's off camera, but you can tell that he's used force because the animals look scared when something small happens to them, like, you know, just a little tug on the collar, or the dog's walking next to them, but the animal looks really scared. And realistically, what you want is the animal to look happy to do what you want. Because if they're looking scared or resentful, then something's going to happen behind your back when you're not enforcing the good behavior, or something bad will happen to somebody else.
Well, I always felt like if I was a dog, I would do anything Caesar Milan told me, because he has this presence that would scare the bejeebers out of me. The thing that I'm a little bit, why I'm a bigger fan of you and others that are applied animal behaviorist, is that not everybody can be Caesar Milan. And to me, it sounds like there may be some really dicey situations happening once the dog is back in the home of the people who are trying to do the Caesar way.
Right, because when you're using force, you're not necessarily addressing the underlying problem. For instance, if you were afraid of spiders, and so you would get, you know, you'd probably want to get a broom and kill them all, and then somebody came and then, you know, took you and shook you or used some force on you, it's not going to make you feel better about the spider. You're just going to know that you better not do anything to the spider when they're there. And you may actually feel worse because now you're more conflicted. The spider gets closer and closer to you, and you're supposed to not do anything. You're not allowed to act out or show your fear at all. And what we'd rather do is change your internal state and make you feel happy about the spider and feel relaxed and give you other things to do, train you to do other behaviors that are more appropriate.
Well, in your book, I have to tell you, I see this picture of this. I don't know how you talk this gal into it, who's afraid of looks like a tarantula or something in the photo, and she's weaning away from it into the arms of her, looks like a boyfriend. And then later on, you see her enjoying a nice little snack next to the spider. How did you get this person to do this? That's magic.
Yeah, so counter conditioning and desensitization. Counter conditioning is changing the underlying emotional state. So if they're scared in a situation, you want to train them to be happy. But you can't just put them right next to the spider or right in the middle of that situation and think that you're going to change their emotional state with food or games. You have to start with whatever you can get. So, for instance, maybe you need to start with her 5 or 10 feet away and good things are happening to her, and then she can gradually work closer and closer. Now, when you do it that way, you can get a change really fast. So something... For instance, there's the case where Cesar Millan has a poodle and that doesn't like being groomed, and he just holds it still, and then he actually gets bitten. But then he puts kind of like a choke hold on it to hold it still while the owner is clipping it, and the dog is growling the whole time. And finally, by the end, the dog is tired, so it can't do as much. But you haven't changed the emotional state. And really, in that same amount of time, he could have... introduced the brush and food at the same time and then stopped, and then introduced the brush and food at the same time and stopped, so that the dog understands getting brushed equals food, but I'm only getting brushed for a couple seconds and I only care about the food, so it's not a big deal. And what you do is you gradually start grooming more roughly and longer, and then when they're good at that, then you start brushing and then adding the food after. And I have a video on my website showing that with a toenail trim, where we get the dog so we can trim its toenails in like 5 minutes, whereas if you're at a vet hospital or a groomer, you need 3 people for this dog, and the dog's screaming the whole time, and maybe people are getting bitten, and then the dog doesn't like going to the vet hospital or groomer, and what happens when you need to do even more?
Hey, that's a perfect segue for us to take a commercial break. I want to make sure that everybody knows her website is called AskDrYin.com. That's AskDrYin.com. We're speaking with Dr. Sophia Yin, author of this new book, Low Stress, Handling, Restraint, and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. We're going to find out more about how we can work better with our dogs right after this commercial break. So sit and stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a pause. 4 furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. All Behave will be right back.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Hi, this is Marcy Davis and my service dog Whistle, and we're your hosts of Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Working Like Dogs is the show where you can learn everything you ever wanted to know about working animals or working dogs. Whether you're a member of a working dog team, or you've just seen a working dog or animal out at the mall or the grocery store, and you're curious about how these amazing animals work with their human partners, then Working Like Dogs is the show for you. Join us for the inside scoop at Working Like Dogs on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, this is John Provost. You might remember me as Timmy from the Lassie series. Well, you know, every time Lassie comes home, she always has me turn on Pet Life Radio so she can listen to Arden Moore on that show, you know, Old Behave. Woof! Woof!
OBehave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now, back to your fetching host, America's Pet Edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the OBehave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Our special guest again is Dr. Sophia Yen. She is a veterinarian and applied animal behaviorist. She's written this amazing book that has, count them, 1,500 photos of the right and wrong ways to deal with dogs and cats in a variety of situations, everywhere from training to handling to being in a vet clinic, a groomer's clinic, to all that fun job giving medications to your dogs and cats. In addition, you may see her on TV. She's been on the Animal Planet and the Discovery Channel. She's home base is the San Francisco Bay Area, but she actually unleashes her advice all over the globe. So we're very fortunate to have her on the show. And we were speaking a little bit about dogs and dog behavior. And one of the things that you also address in the book, which I think is great, are some common training mistakes. And you actually set yourself up with your dog Jonesy in that real favorite dog person pastime, the game of fetch. So tell us what we might do that sort of is the wrong way and how we can really maximize the game of fetch to bring out the best in our dogs.
Okay, so talking specifically about fetch, a lot of people have heard that exercise will make your dog well-behaved. Well, sometimes when you exercise, you can actually make them worse.
Okay.
They just get worked up and excited, but you're actually training them to behave poorly. And one example is playing fetch. Some people have dogs where you have the ball and the dog just barks and barks and barks and jumps up and grabs the ball away from you. And when he does all those things and you throw the ball for him or he gets the ball, you've actually rewarded those overly excited, uncontrolled behaviors. So what I have in the book is a photo of what not to do, which is you're about to throw the ball and the dog just jumps up and grabs it for you. And so that's great. He just got rewarded for that. And and the dog that does that may actually jump up and grab from somebody else, too. And if that person's afraid or doesn't have a ball, he might actually bite them. And
right.
That's actually happened. I've seen that happen to people before, and that counts as a bite. So what you want to do instead is, first, after they're rewarding them a lot for sitting and lying down, what you do is you just hold the ball until they offer a sit, and then you immediately throw it.
Okay.
Now, it's important to have taught them to sit, to have rewarded them a lot for sitting right before, so they're thinking about sitting. And then, instead of telling them to sit over and over again, you want to be quiet and just wait for them to do what you want. Because if you tell them and they don't respond, then they basically have learned to just ignore what you say. And
okay.
We really want them to listen to what we say.
Yeah, I think if you say, sit, 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 if I was a dog, I'd be like, yeah, lady.
They'd like to hear themselves talk.
That's right, that's right. You know, another thing, we talk a little bit about training, you talk a lot about training mistakes in this book, but what are some examples of using specific motivators to get a dog, to get the most out of a dog in a training session? Because I have a dog that's a golden retriever husky mix, and I think the husky in her, you know, when you go to a dog park and you throw the ball, well, Chipper for the first two times will become a golden retriever and go, yeah, 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 the ball.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden you throw it the third time and she's like, I'm a husky. Why would I want to go after that thing? I'd rather chase the dog that's chasing the ball. So how important is it for you to identify your own dog's motivations and how to use them for your best advantage?
Well, it is important that when we talk about positive reinforcement, we're not just talking about food. We are talking about everything that's rewarding to the dog. And so, for instance, at the park, my dog loves to chase squirrels because he's a Jack Russell. He wants to chase everything on the ground.
Wait, we got to introduce him properly. He is the one, the only, the Jonesy.
Yes, Jonesy.
I love the name.
Apparently, he was named after Indiana Jones. I didn't get
it. Oh,
him
yeah, 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 yeah. You're fessing
months.
Up to somebody else.
Right.
I bet you named the dog.
I didn't name it.
Okay.
So for instance, he loves to chase squirrels. Now, when he wants to go after a squirrel and he's on leash, he knows that the only way he gets to go forward is if he comes back to heel position.
Okay.
And this is important. It's as important for them to understand that they're not getting what they want until they do what you want. So that's equally as important. That's as important as rewarding them when they do what you want. So he has to learn, he has to actually come back to heel before we get to start walking forward. And when he comes back to heel, we'll walk forward. And if he starts getting ahead of me, then I'll stop. So it until he comes back to heal. And that way he learns that he has to control himself to get what he wants. So I can use food a little bit in that situation, but to him, the most motivating thing is the squirrel.
And that's food on the run.
Exactly. And the same with toys. You know, I could use food, but ultimately I want him to behave just to get his toy or just to be able to let go, be let loose right. for the squirrel. I want to use what he cares about at the instant. And for him, in the house, praise works well, but outside, praise does not work because he could care less. So.
Okay.
And people, the most important thing is people actually look and see what is their dog responding to. A lot of times people talk to their dog and their dog could care less. The dog cares more about the food or the toy. And mm-hmm. it's important that they not use the praise when their dog doesn't care about it, because then it's just blah, blah, blah.
That's
you want
right.
to use what works in the situation where it will work, so it has real meaning to the dog.
Okay.
So
well, you know, you also brought up a good point, too, is in the specific place, sometimes a dog will be golden in your house and say, I don't even know you, lady. Show me some ID outside. So you're saying make sure you know what the motivators are for that particular environment.
Right. And usually what happens in the house is that, hey, there's nothing better. There's just you. So
yeah.
don't
There's
feel
reruns
so...
on TV. You don't even know how to use TiVo.
Yeah, exactly. Don't feel so great because your dog loves you in the house.
Yeah.
Your goal is that your dog loves you outside of the house and at the dog park, too. And in those cases, you know, maybe in the house you can use praise, but outside of the house you might need to use high-value treats.
Okay.
And the reason I use treats and food anyway when I'm first training a behavior is because I can repeat that behavior. I can reward them many, many times in a short period of time if I'm using a treat. So I mm-hmm. can practice sit like 20 times in 2 minutes with treats, but if I'm using praise, I could practice it maybe 5 times and only if it's a golden retriever. So we want to use whatever works best and what we can get the most reinforcements with in a short period of time.
Okay, we're getting near the end of the show, and I really want to hit a couple of the situations that do affect people. You know, our dogs sometimes need medical attention, or they need to have some pills, or they need to have a gentle leader put on them, and things like, or get their teeth brushed, which is a very good preventative thing to do for our dogs. So it's something about, you know, brushing a dog's teeth or having to put a gentle leader on a dog that's a real leash yanker that I think some of the issue, isn't it us? That we get all that anxious, tightness, fear, whatever. And I'm wondering, how much does that read down to the dog, or these wrong emotions?
Oh, I think the dogs will pick up very much on your emotion. And in fact, if you had somebody else coming to do something to you and they acted nervous, you would feel odd.
Right.
For instance, if somebody was taking you to the dentist, or you went yeah. to the dentist and the dentist was like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. You'd probably be going, can I get another dentist, please? So
yeah, that's so a good point. I have a dentist appointment next week. My guy cracks jokes with me, so that's good. That's
right,
good.
Exactly, because the goal is they put you into a happy emotional state.
Right.
They feel comfortable knowing what they can do, and they take your mind off what's going to happen instead of, you know, trying to boss you around. And by putting you in a happy state, then you feel more comfortable. Now, when people are working with animals, like getting them used to a gentle leader, or they have to trim the toenails, the biggest thing is that they learn the technical skills of pairing treats with a particular procedure, but not trying to do the procedure full out, but just doing whatever they can get, you know, to start with. For instance, with trimming the toenails, maybe you just start with feeling the feet while you give treats, and then next you bring the toenail trimmer out and give the dog treats, and then next you tap the feet with the toenail trimmer while you're giving treats. And so there is a progression, and if you go through the progression and you're watching your dog's response, then you can get through it very quickly and you feel comfortable and you feel that the dog actually likes it, and so you don't feel guilty about doing it either.
Yeah, but I think the problem here, the hiccup, is that people want things done yesterday. They want to have success overnight, and so I think this is a good lesson in patience, don't you think?
Right. If you need it done right away, then it's even more important that you go step by step instead
okay.
of skipping to step 5. Because if you go stepwise, you may be able to get it in a day or in 5 or 10 minutes. But if you skip steps, you're going to make them even worse.
Okay. Well, we want to have a good relationship between us and our dogs and cats. And so we are speaking to Dr. Sophia Yen. She is a veterinarian and an applied animal behaviorist. She wrote this 3-pound book called Low Stress, Handling, Restraint, and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. It has, oh, I'm wrong, it has 1,600 photos. I didn't count them all, Dr. Yen. Plus, yeah. An amazing DVD that really helps you visualize, see the right and wrong way to do a lot of things that we need to do each and every day with our dogs and cats. And you know what? This book is generating a lot of praise from lots of top dogs in the world of pets. In fact, I wanted to read one of your Attagirl quotes. It's from Lori Bergman. She's a veterinarian, and she's also with the behaviorist group. She said, this book is excellent. It's not just great training for veterinary students, but should be read by veterinarians no matter how many years they've been in practice. The techniques in this book will help reduce patient stress, improve staff safety, and enhance professional satisfaction by improving our bonds with our patients. And Dr. Sophia Yen has magically been able to reach 3 different types of audiences. This is a book for people who love and adore their cats and dogs, to vet techs, and to veterinarians. So I give you a big paws up, Dr. Yen, for being able to perform that magic act. That's quite a stunt. Now, you were telling me before the show that if I look at this book, at the bottom right corner of each sort of each page is a picture of a dog. And what happens if I go fast?
It's a flip book. He barks and wags his tail.
Oh, my gosh.
And that logo is my first cattle dog, Rudy.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great. I know Zoe was a late great dog, too, that was part of this project before going up to the great dog clouds in the sky, right?
Yep, she was. She makes a cameo in many of the videos.
That's
great. Right into the shot.
Well, I have to say adieu at this time. Our special guest is Dr. Sophia Yen. I want all of you to dash over to her website, AskDrYen.com. It's AskDrYin.com. She has this book and a couple others. She's got lots of training videos. She truly wants to bring out the best in you and your dog. And I really thank you for being a guest on our show.
Thanks for having me. This was a pleasure.
All right. Well, that's it for today. At this time, I also want to thank my great producer, Mark Winter. He keeps this show humming each and every week. Till next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just 2 words for all you 2-, 3-, and 4-leggers out there. Oh, behave.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.